The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donal Kavanagh with you until 12 noon today. There will be some election talk on the show, but there'll be lots of non-election talk on the show because it's been a very, very hectic few days here on Highland Radio, and a lot of us still sort of just stepping back and catching our breaths to a certain extent. But we will be bringing you up to date with the latest situation. But Letterkenny was resolved last night, and as was expected, that final seat in Letterkenny was taken by outgoing Councillor Donal Coyle and Mary T. Sweeney and Kevin Bradley, both lost out, both calling recounts at various points yesterday. But the democratic process was gone through. It was gone through in public, and I think ultimately the democratic process was vindicated, which is a good thing. Now, before we go any further, remember, we do have a show planned, but the most important part of the show is your participation. It's your views, your perspectives, your take on the issues of the day, or indeed the issues you want to see discussed. You can contact us via text or WhatsApp on 086 60 25000. You can call us on the show. We're 074 91 25000, 00 35 374 91 25000 if you're calling from outside of the dialing area. Shannon taking your calls along with Caroline, who's also producing the show as ever this morning. You can contact us via email, comments@highlandradio.com. You can use social media. We're at Highland Radio on X. We're Highland Hub on Facebook. We're also on Snapchat and Instagram and other virtual platforms, the nature of which I know they exist, but don't know very much about what they do, to be perfectly honest. We're also available, by the way, visually, as was shown to great effect, I think, over the past couple of days with the count coverage here on Highland. We're on Facebook across Highland Radio and Highland Radio News and Sport. We're also available on YouTube. Our channel on YouTube is Highland Radio Ireland, and some of the viewing figures that the Highland Radio Ireland stream was getting over the course of the past couple of days have been really, really gratifying, and vindicated the decision to bring cameras to every count centre and try and give this election a visual coverage that we've never attempted before. And fair play to Oisin and to Greg and to the other architects of what was an amazing weekend. And indeed, fair play to all the people, those producers behind the scenes as well. Caroline brought the whole thing together, and it was just an amazing job of admin, and people like Shannon and Linda and Anya and others, then the engineers, people like Joe and Oisin himself, obviously, Marty, Tommy and Mark and others. So much work was done behind the scenes for all that coverage, and it was a privilege to be a small part of it, and it was just breathtaking to sit back and start watching. To be honest, when I got home from the count, I stayed watching coverage and just watching back over stuff over the course of the past, for about an hour or two before I could get to bed. I also want to say a very special thanks to Donegal County Council and their staff, and in particular the returning officers. The returning officers right across the board, from the Aura Centre in Letterkenny to where I was in Finn Valley, up to the Carndonagh Community School in Inishowen, where they were covering two counts, over to the John Bosco Centre in Donegal Town, and indeed Aura, as we said, in Letterkenny. All the returning officers cooperated with us, they helped us, they worked with us. And our aim was to bring you every crucial count live, and I think that's an aim that we managed to achieve, and we could only do that with the cooperation and help of Donegal County Council, and to all the returning officers and everybody involved, and to the candidates as well, to all involved. Look, it's just been an amazing few days, and as I say, from my own point of view, I was watching the conclusion last night. Hats off to Greg. Greg did a stunning job. He coordinated the whole thing, and it was, I think, something that we will look back on with pride in the coming weeks and months, and hopefully that set a benchmark for election coverage both here and elsewhere as well, because it's nice to see some comments coming from outside of the county as well, people who were watching it. And yeah, if we've set a benchmark, yeah, that's one hell of a benchmark to be setting. Okay, let's look at the papers and see where we're sitting today. Still, obviously, a lot of political news on the front of the Nationalist Irish Independent. Multiple by-elections to create headache for the government. Now, it seems at the moment most people believe that there will be a general election in either October or November. I've heard November 14th mentioned as a date by many, many people, evidenced by the fact that the budget's sort of been pulled forward for a couple of weeks. So the budget's going to be now, it seems, late September, early October. That is an indication there could well be a November election. Micheál Martin, however, the Taoiseach, seems absolutely dead set on insisting that the election will not be till March, the government is going to go its full term. If it does, then there are going to have to be a number of by-elections, it seems, and that could create a headache. Even if there is no general election until next year, the Taoiseach is going to be forced to hold multiple by-elections before Christmas. Now, see, if the general election is October or November, there probably won't be by-elections because they'll just probably hold out until the general election. We'll see what happens. Particularly with some sitting TDs in the run-in for European seats, Barry Cowan of Fianna Fáil among them and some others as well dotted around the country. And it remains to be seen how the government will react to that. I mean, I think the perceived wisdom still seems to be that they're going to go in October, November. But we'll see. Also on the front, a picture of Rashida Adeleke after her run in Rome last night. The 21-year-old ran another Irish record, 49.07 seconds to claim her first individual medal at a senior championship. And she was so close to first. It was nip and tuck right at the last couple of yards. The Polish athlete, whose name I've shamefully forgotten, just got there ahead of her. But what a run, and especially after she took gold with the mixed relay team earlier on in the week as well. Stunning performance there from Rashida Adeleke, adding to the gold from Ciara McGeehan. And more relays and other races to come, which is all very positive. Pretty much the same photograph on the front of the Irish Times this morning, along with Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael fight it out for first place in local elections. Well, they're fighting out for first place in local elections nationally. Here, it's if it's a Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael battle, it's a fairly straightforward conclusion in this neck of the woods in terms of where they stand. Fianna Fáil on 10 seats and Donegal, Fine Gael on 3. Also in the front of the Irish Times, von der Leyen's chances of a second term improve a stronger than expected showing by her centre-right grouping in the European elections suggest that her prospect of a second term in the top EU job have been improved. There had been a suggestion that Ursula von der Leyen would be replaced once the new parliament comes in, but the European People's Party has won more than 180 seats already and is said to be stay the largest grouping by some margin. That is the grouping that Fine Gael are part of. Irish Daily Mail this morning. Well, the Independent is suggesting there's going to be by-elections coming and we could see the government go full term, or that's what Micheál Martin is suggesting. Irish Daily Mail, prepare for an early election. Civil servants and lobbyists are being urged to get their budget requests in early, fueling speculation that an autumn poll is likely. Now, we had that story, I think, last week in some of the papers as well, that when people are told, get your pre-budget, and you'll notice there's pre-budget submissions being published by various NGOs at the moment. Social Justice Ireland and similar groups have already started publishing their pre-budget submissions. Now, when the pre-budget submissions are coming out in June, then you know there's a chance that people are thinking, hang on, this budget is going to be pulled forward. So we know the budget's going to be, it now seems, first week in October. It could potentially be even early. We'll see what happens. Especially yesterday, Simon Harris saying, suggestion was Simon Harris might sort of build on the momentum of the European elections and the local elections across the country and call a snap election to try and get Sinn Féin on the other foot, so to speak. But he says he's not going to be doing that. But he also said he wasn't going to give Sinn Féin an inch to catch its breath. So we'll see what happens, but it's going to be an interesting one. Let's move on to the Red Tops. Kinahan mob down under. Charlie Angel's cartel make fortune flooding Oz with coke. Thanks to biker gang hookup, that's the main story. The Blizzard of Oz, Daniel Kinahan and Dad Christie, are using Aussie biker gangs to distribute vast amounts of cocaine, it's been suggested. Portugal versus Ireland, Eamon Dunphy exclusive, Robbie Keane doesn't deserve Irish job, and we can do this, Portugal versus Ireland, John O'Shea is talking up his chances. And then the picture of Rashida Adeleke and a picture of Ciara McGeehan as well, of course, on the front of the Irish Daily Star and the back page, silver lining the Adeleke story there as well. Front page of the Irish Sun, they're going with the athletics. McGeehan medal glory, she's my golden girl. Father races down street to celebrate Ciara's win. Did he race as fast as she did? I suspect not, but there's joy within Ciara McGeehan's family. And why wouldn't there be? Let's face it, we haven't had many gold medals to celebrate, particularly in athletics. I mean, I think was it Sonia O'Sullivan would have won the last one. So, hey, that's a hell of a long time to wait. Also, some election coverage on the front of the Irish Sun, knits close for Boylan. Lynn Boylan took to knitting to calm her nerves at the Dublin European Elections Count. The Sinn Féin candidate is one of five hopefuls battling it out for the final two seats. Last night, Fine Gael's Sean Kelly became the first MEP to be elected in Ireland South. And there is a long way to go in the year. I think it was Wednesday last year before we had all the MEPs in Midlands North West. It could be even longer today by the way things are looking. Irish Daily Mirror this morning. Again, come on, you girls in green. The McGeehan and Adeliki successes in Rome again. Kinahan and the Oz Hells Angels crime lord. That's the story that was on the front of, was it the Star as well? Dr. Michael, one final stop before tragedy. That's Dr. Michael Mosley, the TV doctor, who has sadly died after falling while walking on holiday in Greece. And a big story about that all the way through. And then Our Family Tree is Broken, Loved One's Pain, as Nicole is laid to rest, in a picture there of Nicole Morley, who sadly passed away last week after being attacked by dogs. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. There's a lot to come on the programme this morning, as we have said. And if you want to get in touch with us, just a reminder, you can text or WhatsApp us on 086 60 25000. Call us on 0749 120 5000. Or you can use Highland Radio, at Highland Radio on X. You can use Highland Hub on Facebook. You can email comments at highlandradio.com. As we say, just turning now to 16 minutes past 9 on the 9th of noon show here on Highland Radio. Don't forget, by the way, the Community Garda information slot coming up on the show in about an hour's time, 10:15 thereabouts, just after the bingo numbers. And you'll be able to get the latest from Garda Síochána and see if you can help with any of the appeals that they have out there. And you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. It's Donald Kavanagh with you until 12 midday. Now, we're going to talk to Kevin about the cross-border initiative within the HSC, which allows people awaiting elective surgery to be referred to a hospital elsewhere, in this case across the border, to the Kingsbridge Hospital in Ballykelly. We know many people who have been referred to Kingsbridge and have successfully had surgery there. Kevin, your story isn't as straightforward as that. Good morning.
Good morning, Donald. No, it's not. I was listening to whoever was on last week with Greg about the cross-border initiative, and it kind of brought the whole thing back to me. What actually happened to me was, went through the system the same as everybody else, got the wee receipt as well and the wee bakery across the road. But when I didn't see the consultant, orthopedic consultant, for back surgery, I was referred, and he said, no problem at all, we'll get this job done. I want you to come in and see the anaesthetist, because I have an underlying condition, a heart problem, right?
Yeah.
So I went in about a week later, met the anaesthetist. Under no circumstances would he operate on me, because they haven't the facilities to do anything if something went wrong. They haven't even an ambulance to get you to help me out. Yeah. So he said no, and he said, there's no point in even us referring you on to Belfast, for it's the same in Belfast. So, therefore, you've went through the whole thing. It was approved.
Yeah.
The finance from HSE, which was 10,000. The bill in Ballykelly was going to be 10,000 sterling. So I only had the balance between the difference in the sterling and euro. So I was all set, but bang, there you go. So I had to get back to the HSE, ring them up and tell them. And they said, yes, that's been normal enough. We have quite a few that has been in that position. And I said, well, what do I do now? Now, don't know. This is coming 3 years ago, right? So what do I do now? Oh, you go back to your doctor and get referred to your Letterkenny hospital, you know.
And did that put you back at the end of the queue in Letterkenny then?
It did. Of course it did.
Yeah.
Because I didn't go on the queue for Letterkenny. I went to my doctor, my GP, to refer me to Ballykelly. Right?
Yeah.
Because I had an MRI scan done, and the scan showed that I needed decompression surgery, which was something I had done 24, 25 years ago. Right?
Yeah.
Like that, he just got me through a simple enough procedure. Everybody's doing it that wants to do it. But that's when it goes wrong.
Yeah.
It's not the bells and whistles for everybody, you know.
Yeah, the thing about Kingsbridge in Ballykelly, it is a private hospital, and it's a damn good one. And that has to be said in fairness to Kingsbridge. It is a very, very good private hospital. But all they can do is routine surgery. They have got very good routine surgeons, very good surgeons doing routine surgery on patients that are referred and patients who go directly to them either privately with their own money or through health insurance companies. But they are not an acute hospital. They do not have an emergency department. They do not have emergency consultants. They do not have the backup there if something goes wrong. So, and I've heard of this happen. Someone close to me actually was in Ballykelly within the past couple of weeks, hoping to have what should have been a routine surgery. But then the person looked and said, no, this is going to be more serious than we thought it was going to be. I am not confident doing it here. And they referred that person back to Letterkenny University Hospital. Now, thankfully, that they're now going to get sorted in Letterkenny University Hospital because it's slightly urgent. But the case is that Ballykelly will say, if Ballykelly see any chance of something going wrong, they will not take it because, as you rightly said, they do not have the backup. They don't even have an ambulance. Now, the question I find, and I wonder, did you ask this at the time, why did Letterkenny refer you to Ballykelly knowing that you had an underlying heart condition and knowing that an anaesthetist would probably correctly refuse to put you under if there was a risk of a heart attack and that anaesthetist, he or she, didn't have the backup?
Well, Donal, that's where the problem is. Letterkenny Hospital didn't refer me to Ballykelly. I got referred through my GP.
Yeah.
Now, I have stents in, I have 7 stents in. The last stent I got in, it was through the helicopter. It had to be helicopter from Letterkenny to Galway. I was due to go in the ambulance that morning, but things went wrong. I had a couple of bouts of heart bother, and actually had 4 heart attacks in the 1 day, and I was flown directly to Galway. But from that, that would have been probably a year before I was in Ballykelly. I was feeling good. So, but the anaesthetist, who I have to say and hold my hands up and praise him for it, he was very honest and very direct about it.
And he was correct. He was absolutely correct.
He was correct 100% because he said, there's nothing sure. This is quite big surgery and it's going to take 3-4 hours to do it. And he said the chances of you having a heart attack through that surgery is quite significant. The percentages—that's my guard dog. The percentages is a way up. He said that. He said I'm not prepared to take that chance, and I shook his hand afterwards and thanked him very much. But it wasn't Letterkenny that sent it, but there, other people have been sent as well, Donal, from the HSE to the likes of Ballykelly and have had surgery declined by anaesthetists because of underlying circumstances, like myself, with heart.
And again, it begs the question, if the referral is coming from... If the referral is coming from Letterkenny, and there's two schemes, I suppose we should differentiate here because there are two schemes. There's the National Treatment Purchase Fund, which is a referral from the hospital to take people off the hospital's waiting list who are on the waiting list for elective surgery. The NTPF idea is you take them off the hospital waiting list and then they're referred to Ballykelly by Letterkenny University Hospital. And then there's the, as I understand what you're on, which is the cross-border initiative, which is you effectively go to Ballykelly, you pay, and then you get reimbursed by the government here.
Yeah.
So you were on the cross-border initiative rather than the NTP, Evan, and the two of them operate slightly separately. And I may have been, to be honest, I may have been slightly confused between the two myself there, because I know in the case of the NTPF, the referral goes directly from Letterkenny University Hospital or whatever the referring hospital is. But it certainly does beg, you know, it is a situation where any private hospital, I suspect, someone with your history of heart attacks, I don't think, with all due respect, any private hospital is going to touch you under those circumstances that doesn't have an attached acute unit and emergency department.
Well, why don't they send us to like a private hospital in Galway or Dublin that have these facilities rather than spending money across the border and pay for it here in the private hospitals either? You know,
I mean, the treatment purchase fund can refer you within the country as well. I know people that have been referred to, say, Blackrock or the Galway Clinic or wherever. So the NTPF isn't necessarily the cross-border. I think the cross-border initiative is a European rather than a national thing, if I'm correct. I think that's actually funded through Europe.
You see, I thought that there's no more referral within the country. What did you call that? The NTP or whatever?
The NTP. I thought it was just the National Treatment Purchase Fund is the NTP.
Yeah. Well, you see, that's not very clear out there. That's not widely publicised that that's still available, you know.
My understanding is the NTPF is still available and it is still operating. That is my understanding. And particularly up here, obviously, because we have Ballykelly is, 40-45 minutes drive away. So, you know, it's an excellent option up here. And as I say, in fairness, I know of a lot of people who have had very successful surgery in Ballykelly. And and I was in Ballykelly myself, not for personal treatment, but I happened to be in Ballykelly, and I think I met about three people I knew in there.
Yeah. Now, my wife's been treated in Ballykelly, a fantastic place. Mm-hmm. I'm not knocking Ballykelly in one way or another. I've only praise for Ballykelly. Yep. I've only praise for that anaesthetist that was so honest and upfront with me. And took his time and explained everything to me, you know.
Yep.
All I could do was thank him going out the door.
Yep.
You know.
I'm going to ask you at this point, Kevin. Did you get the surgery you needed eventually?
No, I have to go to Galway now in a fortnight's time to see the orthopedic surgeon in Galway, and now that's taken 2 years. There was no point going through Letterkenny, for Letterkenny could do nothing for me. I'd just joined the queue and I went to Galway and said. So, it's taken a couple of years to get this appointment. But,
and that, I presume, is the University Hospital. It isn't the Galway Clinic.
Yeah. Well, it's not meeting the surgeon and was it the Bond Street? No.
Merlin Park?
Merlin Park.
Yeah.
Merlin Park.
Yeah.
Thank you, Don.
But that is still within the HSE,
Yeah. You know, so, like, all that will be discussed in a fortnight's time, and we'll see where I am now, because the situation is with me is I could go over to the shop, and the shop's only 5 minutes across the road from me, less. And on the way back, I would be staggering, my legs go.
Yeah.
And people think it won't have passed that you're kind of half cut.
Yeah.
You know, the legs go numb and all that. I can do quite a bit, but when that happens, that's it. You know, standing, I can't stand too long.
Yeah.
All that. So it really is affecting, like, my life at the moment.
Well, look, hopefully, Kevin, hopefully you will get that. You will get sorted in Galway, and we wish you well, and hopefully you'll get the surgery you need, and at the very least, after the appropriate recovery, hopefully before too long, at least you'll be able to get to the shop and back home with some bread and a pint of milk without being under too much pressure. Kevin, listen, thanks indeed for speaking to us. I was just got a message in. Caller says, I'm listening to the conversation regarding private hospitals. The same will apply to private hospitals in the south as well. There is no aftercare. If any complications arise post-operation, you're then transferred to the nearest HSE hospital, and rightly so, because and private hospitals do not have the facilities to provide provide the acute aftercare necessary if something goes wrong. And I remember there was a big debate. You recall years ago, Mary Harney, the then health minister, had this big thing about co-located private hospitals, that there were to be private hospitals developed close to general hospitals and regional hospitals, as they were called at the time, what we call university hospitals now. And there was to have been one developed down just close to the old Unify site at Kiltoy, just as you go up the road there.
Right, yeah,
there was one to be developed there in Kiltoy. And they went as far as turning the first sod, and it's now a field with grass reeds that's about 6 foot high, and nothing really happened with it. But the argument that was always made at the time, as some people would say, well, private hospitals are a lot more efficient than the public HSE hospitals. But the reason for that is all the work being done in the private hospital is routine, straightforward. And what would happen is all the difficult cases will get referred to the HSE hospital, and all the straightforward cases will get done in the private hospital. And then someone will say, oh, look, the private hospital is much more efficient, which would be a very unfair way of looking at it, because all the stuff that's complicated is going to go straight to the HSE, so they get the difficult ones. But yeah, it is absolutely true. Private hospitals like Ballykelly, and they'll be the first to tell you, they do not have acute departments, they don't have emergency departments, they don't have that backup. Kevin, as I said, we wish you very well indeed, and hopefully you'll get sorted in Galway, and may you have a bright and hopefully pain-free future.
Thank you, Donal.
Okie doke. You look after yourself, Kevin. All the best next week. Take care. That's Kevin there, and it's a story that, you know, you hear a lot, that people will go to the private hospital, and it is the case that if there's potentially any complication, or if the surgery is potentially more complicated than they thought it might have been, then they will refer the person back. If it's straightforward, it's a brilliant service, and the NTPF, which certainly I know of people that have had work done under the NTPF, and it's worked an absolute dream. And must actually look into see if the NTPF is still an available option, because I know certainly the NTPF still exists, because it's the NTPF that actually publishes the waiting list figures every month on behalf of the service. So the NTPF certainly still exists. Well, it existed at the end of May, at any rate, because we actually I think I did the story. It did exist last month, because we actually did a story based on figures that they had published. It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. If you have any perspective on this, by the way, please do get in touch. And maybe the central message that's coming from what Kevin was saying there is, you know, if there's potentially going to be a complication, maybe the referral, you know, people that are making the referrals need to sit back. And I can't help wondering, and I'm going off on a slight tangent here, I absolutely admit that. I can't help wondering if this is an argument for what's being worked at the moment, we understand, within the HSE and the health service, is the electronic patient record. The idea being that you will have one electronic patient record where anyone that's doing anything in relation to your health can press a button and see your health history. Because I wonder, do we have a situation where someone like Kevin is in a queue for back surgery? So someone is looking at, this man needs back surgery. What's the handiest thing to do with back surgery? Why not refer him to Ballykelly? They can do the operation he needs. And they maybe do not know that Kevin also has a history of serious heart trouble and had to be rushed to Galway by helicopter after having 4 heart attacks in one day. And if the person that's referring for back surgery doesn't have access to Kevin's full medical history, maybe they don't know about that. And maybe this is one of the most important arguments that's out there for the electronic patient record. That means no matter where we are, no matter what circumstance we're in, we give our number, we give our consent, and the health professional we're speaking to and dealing with has access to everything. And hopefully, once we have that in, that might make things just a little bit more straightforward. And a very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Now, if you're a regular listener to the show and to Highland Radio News, which of course you are, you'd have heard of Rag na Sléibhe, which is a service in Carndonagh, which was closed for a time. There were questions. It wasn't necessarily closed, but there were certainly questions over its future. It's a supervised residential unit providing a very important service. You'll have heard Councillor Albert Doherty speak about it a lot. You'll have heard Councillor Mark McDermott speak about it a lot over the years. Delighted to say that we're joined in studio by Damien McCrory, who is the Acting Area Director of Mental Health Nursing in Donegal, and he is with us in studio this morning. Damien, you're very welcome.
Thank you very much.
Damien, you have been working a lot with Rag na Sléibhe to secure its future, to see how it's going to progress into the future. Tell us, and we had an announcement last week that there has been an allocation and there's been a decision taken and that Rag na Sléibhe's future has been secured. Tell us how this is going to work.
Okay, so thank you very much. Yes, Donegal Mental Health Services is currently transitioning from a residential mental health services to a recovery-focused mental health service aligned with national mental health strategic planning, providing services for people 18 and older with presenting mild to moderate mental health conditions. We're going to realign our services, more focused on recovery, mm-hmm. going to support the existing teams, sort of outreach teams, and we're also going to develop a new day service facility as well.
One of the concerns in the past when there was a move away from residential care for people that would have had mental health issues was that there was a feeling that the HSC would say, we're going to do care in the community. And what the HSC, and not necessarily just the HSC, but what would happen was people with issues would leave a residential unit, would not necessarily get the backup they need, would just go into the community and would be maybe anxious and would maybe have issues and wouldn't have that backup. So from what you're saying to us, the focus now is on making sure that when people don't necessarily live 24 hours in a supervised residential unit, as Ragnarsleva currently is, that they will have the backup, they will have the day services, they will have the facility to be allowed live with maybe a greater degree of independence, but with all the support they need to make that happen.
That's correct. Yeah, where we will be, as I say, providing a service, an 8-to-bed service for people with mild to moderate mental health issues, dealing with their problems. And we're also going to be rolling out the day service facility as well, which will be supported by our multidisciplinary team members, providing programs based on recovery, providing programs based as well on therapeutic interventions. As I say, we're also going to be boosting our sort of outreach team, who provide real structured support based on recovery and care needs for people within their own homes as well. So that's going to be a real change for our service. So it's going to be kind of a three-pinned approach.
Presumably there's going to have to be input from families in this as well, because in a case like this, the cooperation of and the communication with family is going to be central to it.
That's correct. And I thank you for giving the opportunity to speak this morning, because obviously it's a major refurbishment which is required, and it's going to require multiple phases of works. But the first phase, thankfully, we've worked through, and I would like to acknowledge the contributions of all stakeholders, including families, advocate services, political representatives who you mentioned initially in the interview, and more importantly, the service users. This is a major project, but it's a project which is evident of co-planning. And as we work through the phases, it'll be very evident of co-designing as well, that people will be included in conversations to ensuring that we are providing a modern, bespoke mental health services for the Inishowen area and for Donegal in general.
It's interesting that you mention, you know, the service users themselves as being part of that co-design process, because there certainly would have been a perception that in the past decisions would have been made on their behalf, and very much those that were using the service were almost ignored in the corner while other people decided what was best for them. Important that under this model and the co-design model that they have a say in this, that this is their future, this is their lives we're talking about, and they have a major and vital contribution to make to determining how best to progress.
That's correct. You know, that's the service that we manage. That's the culture that we have now embedded in our service. It's all about the service users' opinions. We build and design services based on their opinions as well, which is absolutely vital. And I talked about, you know, the strategic planning nationally, and one of the big plans is obviously the sharing the vision, and it talks really about the service user's experience, and that's very much embedded in this project to date.
And presumably allowing people have that say in their future and treating them with the dignity and respect that you're obviously doing, that's got to help their recovery as well. That's got to help them, you know, be participants and take part in the community, take part in their service, and vitally, make decisions on their own behalf, because maybe too often we haven't acknowledged that people may be users of a mental health service, but they still have the capacity to make decisions, and that's a capacity they haven't in the past necessarily been allowed to use.
That's true, and I totally acknowledge that. But as I say, this project, you know, it's clearly evident of everyone being involved from the initial stages and everyone given that opportunity to be involved in that engagement process. We've had open and indeed formal conversations with the stakeholders that I've mentioned on a few occasions, and have also included them in conversations and inviting them to meetings going forward in the next few months to continue to develop that engagement process, and also to build out and ensure we are developing the modern bespoke mental health services that we are absolutely determined to deliver.
Obviously there are safeguarding issues as well, and we know there are other there have been other experiences in Donegal in recent years. We won't go into that here, but I'm sure lessons have been learned by what happened elsewhere. Safeguarding is going to have to be a very, very vital part of this discussion.
That's correct. That is correct, yeah. And like, you know, we do learn from experiences. You know, we had initial conversations with service users in this project as well, and where the communication perhaps from our mental health services could have been better. But you know, we can reassure everyone that we've conducted an internal review, and that all learning has been now put into practice.
One of the things we have to do on a regular basis in the newsroom is go through HICWA reports when they're published, and I can tell people that they are very detailed and very onerous documents, and we will regularly publish HICWA reports on various centres across the county, and we've published in you know, reports that have been put out with regards to Rachmaslava in the past, and others dotted right around. It's clear from reading through those reports, as I do regularly, that HICWA are very exacting in what they're looking for, and when they do a report, they forensically go through every element of what they expect to be provided, and they present their view as to whether you're compliant or non-compliant, and then you have to fill out a very detailed and a very lengthy document acknowledging exactly how you're going to address the issues that they've identified. That's a process that's ongoing. How important has that emergence of HICWA inspections and reports and dialogue on a regular basis, how important has that been on improving the service?
Well, yeah, the HICWA reports obviously, and also the Mental Health Commission's reports on their regulations. It's absolutely vital and a very, very important component in how we ensure we deliver a safe and high quality service for everyone. We did have a report published quite recently, not from the Carndona SRU, but from the Department of Psychiatry in Letterkenny. And there's learnings from that that I can reassure you as well, as that we have put those learnings into practice as well.
We mentioned it at the start, the political representation. I mentioned Albert Doherty and Martin McDermott, both councillors that we've spoken to here on a regular basis with regards to that service. I'm sure you've had many conversations with them yourselves, and they've raised it regularly in the Regional Health Forum. I'm not sure if this is a fully fair question to put to you, but how important is it that issues like this are being discussed by our political representatives, and that the forum, the Regional Health Forum and other areas are hearing these issues being discussed and the need for progress on them being articulated?
I think it's vital. I think it's so important that, you know, I talked in the outset about engaging with stakeholders, and they're a very important stakeholder in achieving what we aim to achieve. I've had regular contacts with the councillors that you've mentioned, and their input has been vital. It's been consistent and very, very supportive, and indeed very supportive of the plans going forward. You did mention about Albert being part of the Regional Health Forum as well, and he is very consistent in ensuring that remains an item on the agenda, and I would have no doubt that will remain that on the agenda right through to the completion of the plan. And I would also like to take the opportunity as well as to maybe congratulate the two gentlemen on being re-elected as well to the council. So we will have a representation at the table for the foreseeable future. So congratulations to the two men I mentioned.
A comment that's just come in. I'm going to put this to you. There's a caller saying, let's face it, there is no mental health help. You see a doctor, he or she gives you tablets, and that's more or less it. Does there need to be more discussion with regards to referrals, say, by a GP to the service in Letterkenny University Hospital, and then from the and I presume that's the way it works. Someone gets referred first to the hospital, and then from the hospital they're referred on to the local service in Carr, and there is a pathway there. Do we need to see more people access it and more people perhaps referred to get the help they need?
Yeah, you know, I think with the new facility that we are building, you know, we talk about that three spoke facility, and there's day service facility as well there, where there will be a clear, evident MDT approach as well. And it's all based on ensuring better accessibility for our service users and families as well, that we are very, very clear on our pathways of not just referral processes as well, but working as well with our primary care colleagues to ensuring that everyone who requires that help is given that help in a very, very timely manner.
And we know, too, that there are organisations like GROW, like AWARE, like Mental Health Ireland. There's various organisations that are designed, again, to support people that have issues, designed to support the families of people who have issues. Important, too, that they're all part of the process. And I presume when you speak about the stakeholders involved in this process, those groups and organisations in the community have a very large part to play and a very large say in this.
Absolutely. You know, everyone has a very important role to play in ensuring the success of this new venture. We do work very closely with voluntary partners within the community and within Inishowen and within Donegal in general. We have got a very successful wellness cafes, which is now well established, our Woodland Walks as well, which is all supported as well by the voluntary sector. Under green prescribing, it's very embedded as well within our services as well. So the voluntary sector, like the other stakeholders that I've mentioned, have got a very, very important part to play in ensuring we provide that high quality and safe service for all.
Jimmy McCrory, the Acting Area Director of Mental Health Nursing in Donegal. Jimmy, thanks very much indeed for speaking to us this morning. And as I say, you know, we have discussed this issue a lot, and it's great to see movement. And I think the most important thing is it's good to see this has got the agreement of the families, the service users of the community. And I think that ongoing agreement, that ongoing participation is going to be vital. Damien, for the moment, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
We're going to go to Zoom because there is a very important meeting taking place in Donegal this week. You'll know that there's been a huge resurgence in distilling in Donegal. And at the forefront of that resurgence was the Sleeve League distillers, and we've seen some wonderful developments out Crawley direction as well. But James Doherty, the chair of the Irish Whiskey Association and co-founder and managing director of Sleeve League Distillers, is joining us on Zoom. James, very good morning to you.
Good morning, Donald. Great to see you.
You too. James, the meeting that's taking place, delegates from Drinks Ireland and the Whiskey Association gathering in Donegal this week for a very important convention.
It is wonderful to have 50 probably of the top distillers in the country all visiting Donegal. We get to showcase this wonderful part of the world and some interesting kind of ideas that we've got around bringing back sort of Donegal distilling techniques that aren't maybe typical of the rest of the island.
As I said, you were at the forefront of this. You've been operating now for some years, and Crawley has reopened more recently as well. And I'm sure it must be good for you to have another friend, as it were, on the block.
Absolutely, and there's a third one up in Carrigart as well, a much smaller operation. But it's wonderful to see sort of Donegal, which was the illicit distilling capital of the world for a long time, mm-hmm. But back at the sort of heart of distilling in Ireland and. Yeah, exporting, taking that story of Donegal around the world, which is great to see.
Puppets of the line come gougers all from Donegal, Sligo and Leitrim too. It's not the Rural Mountain Dew anymore. It's now legally distilled whisky and potentially a very important part of Donegal's economy into the future.
They're wonderful businesses for sort of creating opportunities of all sorts. So, you know, we sort of collaborate extensively with oyster growers, with the bars, the hotels, with the food scene. Even Tweeds with McGee and Ornetti Dobby here in Donegal. So they're brilliant businesses for that kind of catalytic effect they can have on an area and build tourism. So it's lovely to see that being celebrated in a sort of strong and vibrant way.
this is going to be more than a backslapping meeting, because one of the things you'll be doing is assessing the outcomes of the European elections, the importance of geographical indication products. So you're going to be talking very much about political issues and how to move forward in terms of establishing Irish whiskey, a very distinct brand. I mean, it's more than just an extra E. There is more to it than that.
Oh, very much so. And sense of place and a pride in place is a huge part of it. And making sure that we sort of are supporting brand Ireland around the world. And, you know, a lot of people's first interaction with Ireland is through one of the drinks from the Great Island. But also looking at how we build exports and how those, you know, the interaction with export markets works really well. The support of the experience economy, you know, post-COVID, been a lot of pressure on bars, hotels, restaurants, costs are escalating, and we need to sort of make sure that we're all in that together and building something for the future.
And the meeting takes place on your own premises on Thursday next?
It's very much an Ardrahs show, so we don't have a lot of space on the site itself, so we're using the hostelries in town to feed people, and we're using the parish hall to have the meetings as well. So it is really about celebrating Southwest Donegal as a community. People haven't been to Donegal for a long time, so it's great to see them coming in.
Yeah, and finally, you did say, and we would have spoken over the years when you were getting on your feet, I'm sure COVID didn't help, because it would have been in pre-COVID days we would have had our first conversations. But for even what you've been saying there, your intention always was that Ardrahs, this would be a community facility, this would be of benefit to that local community. This event seems to be bearing that out?
I think so. We get a chance to sort of walk the walk as opposed to just talk the talk. And I think people will see this beautiful part of the world. They'll realize that what we're doing is quite different and strong and very specifically Donegal. And that's got to be a good thing. And we're doing it in a way that leaves a light footprint on the land and kind of promotes responsibility and sustainability in everything that we do.
James Doherty, the chair of the Irish Whiskey Association and the co-founder and managing director of Schlieveleague Distillers. Thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thanks, Donald.
Thank you, James. That's James there, that function taking place in Ardrahs on Thursday of this week. Okay, it's a minute to 10. We're going to be slightly late with the news, so with apologies to Donna Marie, we'll take a short break back after these.